Welcome on in to the Cubs Weekly Podcast. It's presented by Wintrust, proud legacy partner of the Chicago Cubs and exclusive home of Cubs Checking. It's Elise Menaker, Andy Martinez, and Jordan Wicks. Jordan, welcome on the pod.
Thank you.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Exactly.
Love it, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Talk about everything. Andy, you take it away. What are you starting with?
So I want to go back to your debut. You go back to last season. You faced Brian Hayes, the home run. Reynolds gets a single. McCutchen gets the walk. What's going through your head? What are you thinking in that moment?
Welcome to the bigs. Here we go. It definitely started off not the best. But for me, I felt like I was making really good pitches at that time. I was just missing. They hit two pretty good pitches. Tommy came out, just kind of settled everything down, told me, he's like, look, you're making really good pitches. Just keep going where you are. And, they'll start swinging. Things will start going your way. And, they surely did. And Tommy definitely likes to remind me about that mound visit and, how I believe it was called on air as the greatest mound visit in baseball history. So.
And so you're over it. Hey, what do I get the credit?
It's all right. Tommy can have it. He likes it.
He did all the work there.
I mean, you bring up a good point because something I noticed after your starts, and I'm wondering how you got to this point, you can acknowledge and recognize, even if things aren't going your way, I like the shape of my pitches. I like the location. How long did it take you to get to a point where you're not so result-oriented but process-oriented?
I'll be honest with you. It took a little while. I would say, whenever I was in probably the second half of my first year in pro ball was the really big one because, the first half of the season I was riding a lot of the ups and downs of, whether there were, maybe an error or a ball that, flared in and dropped that wasn't hit very hard and, stuff like that. And, I started to realize quickly after, toward the second half of that season, the only thing I can control is, what I can control is where my feet are, making sure that I'm getting just a little bit better each and every day. And so for me, it became like, even if my outings are good and bad, I'm not going to so much like ride the roller coaster of it. I'm going to take something from everything. I'm going to take, okay, this is the stuff that was really good. This is the stuff that we still need to work on. And so for me, those are the big things that I like to take from each outing.
How do you think you've gotten there mentally to getting used to that? I mean, Craig Counsell mentioned a couple days ago, it was interesting. He said, it's the first time a lot of guys struggle when they get to pro ball. Like you've been the best player in high school. You've been the best player in college. It's the first time you really hit any struggles.
Yeah, and I think that's a big key for a lot of guys in this game is, how do you handle failure? Because you are going to fail in this game. It's a game of failure. It's part of it, And so for me, it was like, okay, if I'm going to fail along the way, I'm going to learn something from each and every time I do it. I'm going to get something out of when I fail because if not, then you're failing basically for no reason. You're not gaining anything to make you better out of it. So for me, it's like, I'm going to fail. It's a game of failure. What am I going to take from each and every time out? And so for me, that was one of the things that really kind of, helped me make big steps.
You just mentioned that the first time you're really going through pro ball is kind of when you develop this mindset. So when you get called up, what surprised you or what maybe didn't you know beforehand that now, you've kind of picked up on? Just what was something that, you have a grasp on now that you didn't anticipate?
Yeah, I think the coolest thing for me was just like kind of that shift back to, the kind of mindset that the only thing that matters is winning, because for me, coming up through high school and college, I always had coaches that talked all the time about, the thing that's most important isn't your stat line or isn't how well you do in the game. It's that the team wins. And that's how I was brought up from the time I was 5 years old, playing for Scott Stroth for, through high school, through college. And, for me in minor leagues, it's a little bit differently because you kind of get this mindset of you're worried about your development. You're worried about you that day. And so it's an interesting, it was kind of a little bit of a hard transition for me at first. And then almost coming back to, the bigs where it's, again, all about winning was almost refreshing for me because I felt like comfortable doing that. And so the thing I kept just repeating to myself in between innings every time when I was up was just just put them in a position to win the game. Just put our team in a position to win the game. That's your only job. Just keep them in it, whatever you got to do. And so, it was almost like home for me.
And it takes it off of you then, right? So you're not because the development part is good, but I feel like in the majors it can set you back because it just makes you worry about too much. And it's also interesting because in college, one of the things that you hear about from scouts when they go to college is they're on a winning team. They go to the College World Series, whatever it is. And so I've never actually heard that before, how it must be a weird transition where then you go to the minors and it's like, but now focus on yourself.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's very interesting because I feel like, people talk a lot about, you know, developing a slider, developing velo, developing everything. Like, I think developing winning baseball is just as important as, like, anything else, because, like, there's little things that winning teams do that, you know, others may not. And so being able to do those things are, I think, equally as important in developing as anything else.
What is the adrenaline rush? What is the feeling when you're in a pennant race like you were when you first got called up? Like, I mean, I think everyone, when they're playing baseball in their backyards, it's Game 7 of the World Series. You didn't experience World Series, but you experienced, you know, a pretty close feeling in that pennant race. What's that like?
Yeah, for me, I couldn't really tell if it was the adrenaline of just getting called up or being in a pennant race. So it was all kind of at the same time. For me, I felt like it was, you know, the main adrenaline was just kind of like before I actually got going. So like the lead up to the game and stuff like that, and, you know, kind of trying to stick to my routine. But I feel like once I got out on the mound and, you know, started pitching and, you know, started getting outs, it just became, you know, baseball as normal. You know, it became kind of like, okay, you know, I've been doing this my whole life. It's just bigger, louder, more fans, all this sort of stuff. And so for me, it was, you know, a good reset once I actually got out there that, you know, okay, like this is where I'm most comfortable.
So kind of going off of that, when you are a first round draft pick and there's a lot of hype and everyone talks about you, describe what the pressure can be like and maybe what you had to deal with to not feel that or to try not to feel, because you always come across like very poised and you have such a good mindset. But is there that person in there that's like, can have those moments?
For me, it's like I always feel like I hold myself to a higher standard than anybody else is going to. You know, I have the highest expectations, I feel like, of anybody for me. And so for me, I wasn't really worried as much about, like, you know, other people's expectations for me, because I wanted myself to be the best version of me that I could possibly be. And so, you know, I'm always the one that's going to hold me to the highest standard, I feel like. And so, you know, I didn't feel like I had a whole lot of issues with that.
As you prepare for this season, one of the things that you went through last year experience-wise was career high in innings, career high in games pitched. What did you learn about yourself? What was it like to go through that? And what do you take from that going into this year?
Yeah, that was a big thing that I learned toward the end of the year, just being able to watch guys like Steely and J-Mo and all that sort of stuff was, you know, throughout the season, just like that, pacing yourself, you know. And a lot of that is, you know, maybe like your weight room routine, not going as heavy throughout the year because, like, you've got to last that extra month longer, that extra, you know, 30, 40 innings toward the end of the year. And so for me, that was a big thing coming into, you know, this season was, okay, you know, this is something we're going to pay a lot more attention to throughout the year. I'm going to take my off days when I get them, take the recovery. And, you know, just talking to guys like that is just, you know, how much importance there is on recovery as well as, like, strength and staying in shape and all this sort of stuff is, like, you need your off days as well. And so for me, that's something I focused on a lot more this spring and throughout the year.
Because part of that too is, like, you don't just want to pitch to the end of September, right? There's that goal that you want to pitch a few an extra month, right?
Yeah, no, there's even more than we did last year. And so for me, that went into a lot of my training this offseason. It went into a lot of, you know, kind of the experimental routine stuff for this spring, is just, you know, having that focus, having that, you know, bigger picture mindset, and just, you know, using that heading into the year.
You've referenced it a couple of times where when you're called up, there's that moment of the crowd and the energy. Okay, so when you're at Wrigley for the first time, what's it like? Like, did it compare? Was it more than you thought?
I mean, it was unbelievable. I'm honestly glad I didn't debut at Wrigley, because I feel like it would have been a little bit, like, the best thing I think that happened was I got to go home for three games and, like, sit in the dugout and watch three
games.
That's
right.
At
I
home
remember that time
before,
that you said,
you know, pitching there.
Yeah.
Which was nice to me, because I kind of got to feel the crowd, feel the energy, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing like it. It's the first time I've ever in my career had, like, a, like, home field advantage like that, when you pitch at home where you've got that loud crowd, you've got them, you know, back behind you. And it was something like I never felt before, and it was unbelievable.
Do you hear it? At what point does it kind of just become, right, because you're, like, so in the zone? I always wonder that. You don't, like, you hear it, but you don't, right?
Yeah, you don't really. It's just kind of like background noise for the most part, is all it really is, because – you know, after a while, it's weird, because you don't really, like, intentionally do it, but it just kind of comes because you don't really hear a whole lot out there. Like, you just get so focused. But yeah, I mean, it was the one time I did really, like, take a moment to soak it all in was coming off the mound after the home debut. Got a standing ovation walking off the mound, and that was, you know, I took a second and just kind of looked around the stadium, because that was just a really cool moment for me.
Do you have a stadium that you're – obviously you pitched at Wrigley, but do you have a stadium that you haven't been to yet that you're looking forward to pitching in?
Fenway. Fenway is going to be really cool. Me and my wife are both really excited to go there. We're, you know, it's interesting because you talk all the time about, you know, the two most like iconic stadiums, and well, one of them's at home, so you know you go there all the time, yeah. Which is awesome. But yeah, I think that Fenway's the other one that's like kind of that, you know, right there, you know, with them as far as like history and stuff like that. And so, getting to go there will be really cool.
It's always on the list, right?
It like, is. Yeah.
You had mentioned you were picking the brains like of Steele and JMO and stuff. How about Kyle Hendricks? What have you taken away from him and the advice he's given you?
Yeah, I think I told somebody, you know, I told Kyle if he ever wanted me to stop following him around for the first couple weeks, you just need to let me know. Because I think I followed him around and listened to what he said for the first 2 weeks of the season.
Kyle's too nice.
Nice of a guy. He's the nicest guy on the planet. But, yeah, just being able to, you know, talk to Kyle. And he's the most, like, welcoming and open. Like, he'll talk to you about anything. He will, you know, give you advice on anything. And, you know, he's the kind of guy where, like, he's going to give you your space. And, like, but if you go up to ask him and, like, ask him a question, he's more than happy to talk to you, more than happy to give you his opinion. And, you know, he's just that's the kind of, like, invaluable stuff that you get in spring training. It's just getting to talk to those guys and getting to talk to, you know, just about their routines, about what they do in this situation and all this sort of stuff. And it's really awesome.
What is the singular best piece of advice you've gotten from Kyle Hendricks?
I think for me, it was actually like, you know, it's just staying true to who you are. And because one thing I talked to him about was just a little bit of like, you know, okay, you know, in certain situations, like how do you kind of battle, you know, getting ground balls and stuff like that versus going for like swing and miss, you know, because they just made a lot of that. But, you know, my opinion's always been, and I talked to Kyle about this too, is like, you know, we got two Gold Glovers up the middle. You got Belly in center and Happ in left. Belly sometimes plays first. Like, why would I not try and get ground balls when I got that middle infield, you know? And so for me, it was just kind of like that, you know, staying true to who you are. And he said it'll come, and just understanding, you know, slowing down and understanding the different situations.
Always like to hear it. We're going to hear more from you, but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
You've got the jersey, the ball cap, the foam finger. Everyone can see you're a Chicago Cubs fan from a mile away. Ready to take your look to the next level? Upgrade your wallet with an exclusive Cubs debit card, which you can get when you open a Wintrust Cubs checking account. With no monthly fees, free ATMs nationwide, and a $300 bonus when you open your account. Start showing your Cubs pride with every purchase. Sign up at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Only $100 required to open. No monthly minimum balance and no monthly maintenance fees. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
We are back here on the Cubs Weekly Podcast. Elise Menaker, Andy Martinez, and still with Jordan Wicks. And Andy, we got more questions for Jordan.
So we talked a little bit about your path, and we talked a little bit about your journey. But you're coming out of high school, and you had some dominant numbers. 0.86 ERA, 11-1. Were you a little disappointed that you weren't drafted coming out of high school?
Honestly, no. Like, I didn't feel like I was ready to be in professional baseball at that time. Yeah. I needed to go to college. I needed to get in a collegiate weight room for 3 years. I needed to build up that side of myself, because I didn't feel like at that time I was ready to, like, you know, be on my own that much. Like, because in college you're on your own, but your parents are still there. You know, you call them and ask them, do I separate my colors and my whites and the laundry and all that sort of stuff.
I throw it all in cold.
I don't know, ask my wife. But we sit there, and so, you know, I just didn't think I was ready for, like, professional baseball at that time. I felt like the best thing for me was to go to college. I wanted to go somewhere where I felt like I could play early in my career and get that development on the field, which is exactly what K-State, you know, offered me the opportunity to do. And I thought it was one of the best decisions I ever made. I absolutely loved my 3 years there, and I wouldn't change a thing.
Well, it leads perfectly into my next question, because what made you choose Kansas State? And you were the first player to be drafted out of K-State in the first round, so mm-hmm. And what that meant to you.
Yeah, for me it was, you know, it was big because, like, when I was coming out of high school, I felt like I was, you know, I felt like I was a better pitcher than I got a lot of credit for. You know, I had a couple schools that told me, you know, I wasn't good enough to go there. You know, one of them near my hometown, which is a question I get a lot, is how I got out of the state of Arkansas. And I make that really easy. You know, they told me I wasn't good enough to go there. And so for me, it's a kind of a moment that I like a lot, because that, you know, I wouldn't change that either, because that fueled me for all 3 years when I was there. You know, that motivated me, you know, to be the best version of myself I could be. And, you know, I loved the opportunity of going to K-State and, you know, having the opportunity to pitch on the weekends as a freshman in one of the best conferences in the country. And I feel like going in there and as a freshman and pitching in conference play and having that struggle, you know, we talked about failure earlier, and having that struggle like kind of helped me learn that, you know, bumps are going to come in the road and you got to just keep rolling.
What would you say to kids who are looking at colleges? And I know it's very different even than when you were there now with NIL and everything, but you get noticed, right? Like if you just play, like that's, it seems like that was your mindset. What's your advice when they're weighing all these decisions?
My thing is, you know, don't believe what they tell you. Do your own research. Cause you know, for me is like, when I went through the recruiting process, like college coaches are going to tell you what they think you want you to hear. You know, I had a different recruiting process because my coach at K-State didn't actually recruit me. He came in like my freshman year. We had a new coach, so it was a little bit different there. But for me, it's just like I see so many kids, especially in the state of Arkansas, that, you know, want to go to one particular school because of the shiny lights and the shiny, you know, how attractive it is, and they don't actually get on the field and play. Like, being on the field and playing is the most important part of baseball, because that's where you develop. You don't develop sitting on the bench for 2 years and then going and all this sort of stuff. Like, you develop being on the field, learning, being in games, being in those big moments. And so for me, it's like, go in, look at like how much they play freshmen in the past years, how much, you know, these colleges, because actions will tell you what the actual truth is. And so for me, that's the big thing I try and tell kids, is just do your homework, because it's a big decision and, you know, you don't want to regret it.
You mentioned you felt like you weren't ready once you came out of high school. What was your aha moment, or your like, I think I can do this moment? When did you realize, like, you know, I can probably play a little bit past Kansas State?
Yeah, for me, it was kind of my junior or senior year of high school. I felt like I had a chance because I had a big velo jump that year. wanted to go to K-State, ended up getting an offer there, committing, and, you know, had pretty good summers, had pretty good high school years. And I felt like, you know, the big difference between me and a lot of guys that were coming in the draft and all this stuff was just the strength aspect, you know, having a good weight room routine. And so one thing I asked a lot about was, you know, I wanted to talk to the strength coach. I wanted to talk to the trainer. I wanted to talk to the pitching coach when I was getting recruited, because everybody wants to go talk to the head coach. Realistically, in college, like as a pitcher, you don't spend a whole lot of time with the head coach. Like, you just don't, unless he's the pitching guy. You spend a ton of time with the trainer. You spend a ton of time with the strength coach. You spend a ton of time with the pitching coach. And, like, those are your three most important people.
I'm going to kind of combine a few questions into one. This spring experience, what it's been like for you, and also knowing the opportunity that is ahead with, you know, trying to earn that fifth spot and what that could mean for you.
Yeah, it's been awesome. You know, for me, it really started in the off season because, you know, we took a lot, you know, and Tommy in the pitching department did a tremendous job of, we met at the beginning of the off season and was like, okay, you know, like, what are the things that we've got to get better at going into next season? Based on the, you know, what happened. And I think the best thing that happened to me last year was the last start in Milwaukee, because it showed me everything that I needed to fix heading into the next season. Like, obviously didn't want it to go the way it did, was really upset the way it went. But for me, looking back on it, it showed me kind of a path of like, okay, this is the stuff you've got to get better at in the off season, because this is going to like transform, you know, your next season. And for me, it was that kind of moment where, like, you know, you can take that failure and just let it be failure, or you can take that failure and like learn from it and take the lesson out of it, which is the route I decided to take. And, you know, Tom and them did a great job being like, you know, these are the things we think you need to work on. And we had a really good off season. You know, we've been developing some stuff in camp that's been really good so far. And so, you know, just continuing to put one foot in front of the other and just continuing to get better.
There's a handful of guys like you, young guys that have either made their major league debut or are on the cusp of it, that are really exciting for Cubs fans. What are your conversations with some of those guys, whether it's like a Hayden Wesneski or a Javier Assad, or maybe even like a Cade Horton? What are those conversations like, and have you guys kind of like pictured yourself of what you guys can be here in the next few years?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of like building off of each other and what we learn. You know, we all have great relationships. You know, everybody you mentioned I have a great relationship with. And so for me, it's like, you know, kind of sharing each other's, you know, what things have worked, what things have struggled with, you know, what, you know, when we're facing a certain lineup or a certain hitter or anything like that. And, you know, just continuing to try and like help each other, because we know that kind of like iron sharpens iron type of mentality, to where, you know, if we're all gradually getting better, it does nothing but help the team. So that's the, you know, one of the most important things.
This is a fun one we're going to end on, okay? You've got a great changeup, right? That's what mm-hmm. you're known for, especially coming out of the draft. If you, though, could take any pitch from any other player, what pitch would you want?
In the Cubs organization.
In the Cubs organization, yes.
In the Cubs organization. Wow. That's a tough one.
We only ask the hard-hitting questions here.
I know. This one's actually funny because he's my roommate this spring, but I'd take Cade Horton's slider. I would.
Oh, a little sneak preview of what we could see in the future.
I would, 100%.
Why is it so special?
I think it's effective just because, like, the movement and the velocity and, you know, how much conviction he throws it with. You know, and he's an absolute competitor. I love watching him pitch. He's another guy that we talk pitching all the time, and so, you know, he's a fun guy to talk to.
That's a good note to end on. Mm-hmm. Jordan, thank you so much for the time today.
Yep. Thank you guys for having me.
We're back here to wrap up the Cubs Weekly podcast. Just finished up with Jordan Wicks. Fantastic. I love hearing him talk. It was so fun.
It's always so good.
Yes. And it's going to be really fun because we're going to see a lot of the top prospects in the breakout series that's happening Friday for the Cubs, but starting Thursday. I just think, Andy, it's you know, we've highlighted on Marquee Sports Network, we've highlighted the prospect system, the road to Wrigley. I think this is so cool, too. This should be happening.
Yeah, it almost seems like, well, what took so long? But that's okay. Like, right, it's better late than never. Like, you're excited about this kind of things. You get to see minor leaguers in spring stadiums, right? Like, they're in a big league atmosphere. They have all the attention on them. It's all about them. And really, like, that's – you get the best of all of them, right? Like, if a guy's in AAA, like, he can still be in this game. If a guy's in single A, he's still in this game. Like, it makes it for a really exciting catch-all game, right? You don't have to worry about going to one backfield to watch one guy and then another backfield to watch. Like, you get all of them in one field.
And it's perfect for the Cubs because of where their farm system is at. These are the guys that you want to highlight and see because we're talking about them a lot. Yeah. Because some of them could have big impacts on this team in the near future, maybe, you know, not so distant future. And so I think to get that opportunity, not just to hear about them, but to see them, because even for myself, right, like, you can read about them,
right,
like scouting reports, whatever, but you want to see them,
right?
And that's what I love, is when you can give them a stage to perform on, and like you're describing, just put them in that environment to see them shine, because we get glimpses of it. That's what's fun about spring training. You get glimpses of those guys. What do we see from Ron Casey? Oh my goodness,
right,
the way he hit,
right.
Matt Shaw, getting to see, just drafted, but now getting to see him. That is what I think is that'll be really fun. I love that part for them.
I'm excited for a lot of fans to be able to watch this game, because to me, to your point, like, I knew how good Owen Casey was. Then I saw him play out on the major league fields during practices and things like that. And I'm like, wow, this guy is really, really good. Same thing with Matt Shaw. Same thing with Kevin Alcantara. Like, you're going to see some of these guys and you're going to realize, like, the scouting reports, the statistics, they don't do them, some of these guys, justice. Like, these guys are a lot better than what their batting average might say.
And I think something I just thought as you're describing it is – how do they compare to other players? Because the White Sox have a couple of really good prospects. What do they look like when we're talking about, okay, the Cubs have a really deep farm system. There's a lot of top prospects. What does that look like in relation to another farm system?
Yeah.
And that's what I think will be interesting, too. Because, again, you read about it. But what I'm a visual person, right? So I like to see it. And
right.
That's what I think is really fun about these games.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it for sure.
Yeah, it'll be great. And it would be fun to watch Jameson Taillon. Unfortunately, that just doesn't seem to be happening in the near future. So then right away, you're looking at the depth of the rotation. Andy, for you, what sticks out just when you're hearing about Taillon not supposed to be long term, but at this point questioning opening day?
Yeah, it's an interesting lower back tightness, lower back spasm. I'm not sure what the exact terminology is, but he was warming up for his first spring start 10 minutes or so before first pitch, like, maybe even less.
Like 10 pitches into his warm-up.
10 pitches into his warm-up, he gets scratched, and he comes back the next day, same symptoms. It's really interesting to see what kind of happens. It has this trickle-down effect. We talked about the starting pitching depth that the Cubs have had for, you know, all offseason, really, right? Whether it's a Jordan Wicks, whether it's a Javier Saad, whether it's a Hayden Wesneski. Well, now these guys are directly impacted on it. Who becomes the fourth starter now? It's probably Jordan Wicks. The fifth starter, it becomes interesting. Is it a Drew Smyly who's getting stretched out? Is it a Javier Saad who's getting stretched out as well? Is it a Hayden Wesneski? What do you do with that fifth role? I think right now my gut reaction would be it's probably Wicks fourth and Drew Smyly fifth, and Javier Assad getting some spot starts with maybe Hayden Wesneski starting in the minor leagues because of the options that he has. But I think that could all change in the next 3 weeks or 2 weeks that we have left in camp. Like, I don't think that what we think right now is going to be what it is come opening day. And I also don't think it's going to be the same thing come April 20th. Because
that's basically what Council has been saying.
Right, because at the same time, like, Jameson Taillon could be ready come April 10th or something.
Sure.
So you have to have these flexibility and you have to have these guys built up. And that's why you stretch out a Drew Smyly in spring training and don't silo him into being a reliever right away, because you know that this thing could happen and you might need him to be making spot starts.
Yeah, as you were saying that's exactly what I was thinking. And that's what Council had just said the other day. Like, this is why we stretch them out. Let's have the option. We can always put them in the bullpen when needed. But this right now is giving us the option. And I think it pretty much also hits on what we were just talking about with the farm system, right? Like, this is when the depth shines, when you have options and you're not looking around saying, who are we going to go to? But you can list off 3-4 pitchers right there who all of them have big league experience at this point. And that's how valuable it was bringing them up in the last year or two, whatever it was, that they can draw on that. And that when you need them, because you want to start off strong. This is a team that wants to go to the playoffs. So to make that happen, you want to make sure that you get off to a good start, and pitching is going to be a really big part of that.
It's really going to be a massive part of it, and that's also why they built up some of the bullpen depth that they have. But that's why I also think that you're maybe not looking at the Cubs going externally to fill this rotation need, because they're at a place where they have this kind of depth. And if you sign someone, well, then you start blocking some of these young pitchers. The trickle-down effect goes to someone like Cade Horton, right? Like, who, if he starts in Double-A or Triple-A, could be knocking on the door come summer. If you have 6-7 starters that are pitching well, how do you kind of work Cade Horton? And I know that's a good problem to have, but you know the long-term impact he has, and you don't necessarily want to block him per se.
So we'll keep everyone updated as news comes out and as we get information on everything, as always. But that'll do it for this edition of the Cubs Weekly Podcast presented by Wintrust. And don't forget to download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and check us out in video form on the Marquee Sports Network app.